It's the month of March, and this month, Streaming Things is brought to you by Chester Copperpot, Trey Barrera, Conrad, Luke and Sarah, Dave Malfara, Rabbit Dog in a Barbie Car, Jose Ruben Cruz Rodriguez, Thomas Alexander, Emmy, Joe Velez, Valerie, Stanton Valentino, Aaron Layton, Crystal Trujillo, John Collins, Ghost, Andrew Gray, Jen Robinson, Kate, Chloe Richardson, Kalisha Reeves, Kiki Newton, Kevin Strother, Jeanette Murphy, Casey McCain, and Enza.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things continuing and ending our coverage of The Last of Us Season 1 on HBO Max. This time, it's a mailbag.
Mailbag.
We got dozens and dozens of great emails, maybe hundreds. Nay,
maybe hundreds. You don't know. We're not sharing those numbers.
I just want people to know that if we didn't read your email on the air, it does not mean it was not a good email or a conversation starter. At a certain point, I just kind of had to pick and choose. At a certain point, you just got to give up and say, fuck it. I'm going to stay with what I got. Right. It's like getting married.
You have to endure and survive.
That was supposed to be a joke, but you didn't laugh and it made it sound like I have a really cynical view of love. But we know that Steve loves love.
I love love. Burr, 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 burr. Burr, burr, burr.
Full disclosure. This is the case every time. If you only listen to our Last of Us coverage, you only get to hear us loopy as shit after we've been podcasting for 8 straight hours.
Yeah, we started podcasting at 4 p.m. today. It is now 10 p.m.
But even before that, I'm like prepping the emails and watching and taking notes and stuff. Yep. So it's an all day venture. Mm-hmm. So I'm losing my mind. But I do have about 20, 25 great emails we're going to try to get through here to wrap up our coverage while we wait the long wait.
But I do want to say before we get into it today, I know we said last week was the last week. Today is legitimately the last day you can get a Pills Baby shirt or a Tony Time shirt. We extended it because so many people bought some.
Yeah.
So we decided to extend it a little bit more just in case someone didn't meet the cutoff time. So literally today, as you're listening to this on Friday, is your last day. Go to the store. It's in the show notes. Pick up one now if you so desire.
And I put it in the link tree if you find me on TikTok or if you follow us on Twitter or Instagram or anything like that. The link tree's there. And you can click the merch store there. We're not trying to hard sell you. We're just anybody that wants one. You will never be able to get one if you don't get it today.
Right.
But we got some cool Yellow Jackets merch.
I'm so excited about the Yellow Jackets merch. Yeah, it looks great.
Be sure to tell me when I can like post that on Instagram because I'm really proud of that shirt.
Yes. I'll talk to you about it off air.
Awesome. Wink, wink. But also we've really enjoyed our Last of Us coverage. But, you know, if you're really attached to that show as we are, Don't fret, Boba Fett. We are doing the Yellow Jackets coverage, but even if you're not necessarily invested in that show, maybe you don't want to. I understand a lot of people are just really, really hesitant to get another streaming service like Showtime. I really do think it's an excellent show. However, don't worry. You can still listen to our podcast because we've got lots of other like movies and stuff coming down the pipeline. Mm-hmm. A lot of patron voted content.
Yeah.
It's finally going to be getting the attention it so desperately deserves very soon because we're only going to be following.
Next week.
For the first time in a while, we're only talking about one show.
Mm-hmm.
So we can use all that extra time that we'd normally be talking about the second show to do Patreon stuff.
Awesome. I can't wait. I'm really excited to see some of these films. Some of them I've never seen before. So very excited.
Yeah. And most of those films will also be on the main feed. So that is relevant to a lot of people.
Yeah. The chosen episodes will be main feed episodes. The Patreon poll ones obviously are patron specific episodes, but the chosen episodes that we're talking about, like your Class Action Park, your Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, your Grind, your Tombstone, those will be main feed. The Matrix, those will be main feed episodes.
Yes. And our Patreon poll, if you didn't listen to the Yellow Jackets coverage, the winner was Twister.
So
for March, Steve and I will have to watch and review Twister here very soon. Mm-hmm. Very soon. We might have a special guest. We're not sure. I'm going to ask Madison. Since she loves Twister so much, if she wants to sit in
on
that one.
She geeked out when she found
out. Yeah, she's got to come to the Twister coverage, right? But anyway, let's dive right in. Those of you who didn't email or maybe didn't know how, you can email streamingthingspod@gmail.com at any time to email us stuff like this and maybe get it read onto the show. If nothing else, we always do read it. You can also go to patreon.com/streamingthings if you want to join in on those polls we were talking about and other cool rewards.
Cool.
Damn it. Let's dive right in. Our first email comes in from...
Where's it coming in from, Chris? Where's it coming from?
Here's why I got confused. Oh, I don't want to talk about this one first. You know what? I will.
Oh, you know, should we address some elephant in the room? That Jimmy's not here?
Who the fuck is Jimmy?
Who the fuck is Jimmy? Not Andy?
I don't know what you're talking about. Yes, Jimmy's not here.
Yeah, he's not feeling well. So hope he feels better very soon. We miss him.
I just kept rolling. A lot of people are so used to just me and Steve. We're the two constants in this math equation.
This is true.
Then there's an X. There's an equals X chair.
Yeah. Who the is Jimmy?
There you go. But no, this first email, the reason I got confused is because it's mostly a video and I couldn't remember why I included this in the mailbag. And then I did. It comes in from Miranda. Thank you so much for reminding me about this. Essentially, it's an alternate ending. Have you seen this?
With the singing?
Yes.
Yeah.
I just wanted to talk about that. For anybody that doesn't know, look up The Last of Us on YouTube, the alternate ending.
I think it's an IGN posted it.
Yes, I believe so. And the whole shtick is that Merle Dandridge, who plays Marlene, was asked to kind of prank Troy Baker, who played Joel, in the last, literally filming the last most desperate scene in the game that you did see in the show where he shoots the doctors and stuff.
Yeah. It's when Joel and, Marlene are like, kind of, she's like, put her down. She'll get killed at someday, but we can save humanity, that whole thing. And yes. She like puts the gun down.
Well, in the game at that time, the way they had filmed it was that Marlene would come into the doctor's part, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, he asked her to sing, but he went to Troy Baker and he said, no matter what happens, play the scene through, no matter what. And he's like, okay. So she starts singing like, don't do this, Joel. But she's a beautiful singer, like theater.
They both are.
Yeah. They're both like Broadway level good. And Troy just looks for a long time. He's so confused. And he's like,
but I have to say,
yeah, it's so funny. It's two fucking theater kids. Just like, fuck it. We're doing this.
My favorite part of that is like towards the end, like after he has shot Marlene, he starts going, dun, 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 dun. He like gives him his own music. Yeah, he starts singing his own music.
And he does like these herky jerky, like musical type movements.
Your brain is worth more than life and dead.
So good.
It's if you haven't seen that, it's well worth your time. It's really fun. And just the most amazing part of that is she comes out, Merle Dandridge comes out hot.
Yes.
Like she comes out belting this song.
Get away from her! Get away!
You can't save her, even if you get her out of here. What then? What then?
You can see Troy Baker's eyes kind of open up, like, what the fuck is happening? But he never actually breaks. He never goes into a smile.
And you can see like
it takes him a second for the gears to catch up. But once it does, like he starts singing and it becomes this whole beautiful thing.
He never
laughs,
never breaks. But he is like,
yeah,
you can see a production assistant in the background, like snickering.
Yeah.
But other than that, everybody's just like, we're professionals.
Even the dude that he's taken hostage is like not selling it.
He's like, fuck it.
Yeah. I'm a hostage.
Love that. I love theater kids. So thank you, Miranda, for reminding me about that. The next email comes in from Jill K. And Jill K is a longtime friend of the show. Love Jill. Steve, you calm down. You leave Jill alone. But we are going to talk about the giraffe. Okay. Oh. Hi, Chris, Steve, and not Andy. JK, Jimmy. He's not here either.
It's Jimmy.
I just wanted to take a second and say how much I love your show. Been a longtime listener, but am now a Patreon subscriber. Thank you so much.
Anyway, awesome.
Thanks for all you guys do. My boyfriend and I look forward to your show every week and even watch Yellow Jackets because of you guys. I hope you're liking it. Anywhoozle, that's in the email. I have two questions and comments about the finale of The Last of Us. The first is just a surprise, even for me. When we watched the show, we felt the same way about the shitty CGI for the giraffe and thought it would be so easy to get a real giraffe. I mean, you can feed one at the Cincinnati Zoo, people. Well, surprise.
Ooh, she's from Cincinnati.
I guess, yeah. It is actually a nationally famous zoo as well. Mm-hmm. It was a real giraffe. The CGI was only in the background and a real giraffe named Nabo was used. Now, I'm going to pause here before I let Steve off his leash and let you guys know we got thousands of these messages in one form or another. Yeah. I make TikTok recaps and they do pretty well. Typically thousands of fucking people. Did you know it was a real giraffe? I'm not mimicking Jill. I'm mimicking trolls because I did a 3-minute video and that was like a tiny comment that I made. I didn't say the giraffe's CGI was bad. I said in my video, the CGI in that sequence was subpar to me. And an episode I overall gushed about, right? I'm never like the Marvel CGI is so bad. Look at She-Hulk guy ever. I love visual effects employees. I'm sure it's hard. I don't even know what they do. It's wizardry, but I can't be dishonest. Mm-hmm. Are you accusing me of being dishonest about what looks a certain way to my fucking eyeballs?
Yeah.
Now, Jill, again, before I let Steve off his leash, we are aware.
I'm like a mad dog over here.
We are aware the giraffe is real. Thank you for bringing it to our attention because there was a lot of these emails too. There is so much VFX in that sequence. So much that real, very real, lovely giraffe is composited into an entirely fake world. And if that doesn't look good in a couple of the scenes, that's okay to point out. Mm-hmm. Okay. Steve, go.
I'm going to one step further on that.
Bear down.
I'm going to bear down. Different show. That is a very real giraffe. Yes. Thank you to everyone who let us know. We love Nobu. We stan him. But I will say,
it's where Queen Amidala is from.
The giraffe's head is real. Everything else from its jowls down is fake. And it looks fake. In fact, I think I remember in the episode when we talked about it, we called out one shot specifically, and that is the shot when the giraffe turns and goes to Ellie. And it's a wider shot upon reviewing it again. But it's a wider shot. And because just the head is real, and in the wide shot, that giraffe's head is maybe 10% of that CGI'd composited shot, it does not look good. That shot is not a good looking shot. And yeah, the giraffe's head looks great. Everything down, not background, not. And so I think we're still justified in saying like it's kind of funny when people are like, oh, that's a real giraffe. The CGI, it's not CGI. It's mostly CGI.
Well, the thing that I always kind of my retort, because I got a lot of Twitter DMs, Instagram DMs, and I was always nice to everybody. I understand it's funny because there was a lot of like trolley type people shitting on the show because of the quote unquote fake giraffe. And so a lot of people were just used to being like, it's actually a real giraffe.
Yeah.
Idiot. That's fair.
Yeah, that is fair.
But it's like Chris Hemsworth is real, but it doesn't mean him as Thor flying through space can't look like shit. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like that's all we were trying
Chris
to say.
Chris Hemsworth is real, but when he was stripped naked in Thor: Love and Thunder, that was CGI'd enhancements to him. Mm. That wasn't just Chris Hemsworth.
Those cheeks were real though. It was all meat. I'm telling you.
That tattoo is real too. I don't want to sound like I'm disparaging Jill here or anybody else who kindly just was really excited about a real giraffe.
Whoa.
Cause giraffes are fucking cool. They're like so.
And it is a funny
weird
turn of
little
events,
aliens,
right?
Or they're like little aliens, right? Or big ones. I should say. They're very strange creatures.
Long necks,
long tongues, long necks.
Long everything.
Have you ever seen them fight with their necks? Shit's scary.
Yeah. They wrap it around multiple times.
So like
they can choke you with their neck.
Right.
It's kind of weird.
I totally get the enthusiasm. Like, oh no, that was a real giraffe. Like, yeah, that's super cool. We love Nobu, but I still think we're justified in pointing out poor CGI in a scene that's like 90% CGI.
Yes. If you look at that picture, a lot of people send as evidence, it is 90% blue in that photo.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
Is
like
where all the CGI
it's real
goes.
And it's like, what about all that blue shit?
Anyway, it is a neat factoid. On to my question, Jill says, maybe I just missed something, but we all know if Ellie would have been given the choice that staying at the hospital or going with Joel, she would have stayed. But how do we know that she wasn't given the choice? We see her go unconscious. And then the next time we see her awake is in the car and she immediately asks what happened with the Fireflies and where Marlene was. How would she know they found the Fireflies or that Marlene was there without talking to them? Do you think she woke up between the smoke bomb and surgery and talked to Marlene? Again, maybe I missed something or totally misunderstood it. Just wanted your thoughts. And I will say, I should have said this at the beginning. We're going to talk about the essential moral question of Joel versus the Fireflies. There's probably 4 or 5 emails that I chose and they're not in order, but it is the most talked about thing about the show. It's been talked about since 2013 and in subreddits ad nauseum.
Yeah.
And it's funny to them that it's being brought up now. That's the show. But I read Jill's because I think there's some clarity in that scene that I wanted to talk about.
So is this the only one we're going with on this?
No, that's what I'm warning the listeners that there's multiple of these.
Okay.
But they each have a different kind of thing. I wanted an aspect of it. I wanted to touch on.
Okay. I see.
So with Jill, I would say we don't all know that if Ellie would have been given the choice about staying at the hospital or going with Joel, she would have stayed, because there are lots of people that you're about to read, some of them, that think Ellie would 100% not agree to do that if it meant her death. That's one thing people say a lot. I agree with you, Jill, that I think that that is spoken aloud just by her previous actions. That's something we know about the character of Ellie, is that she would gladly sacrifice herself for other people. However, what I wanted to touch on is in the game, the way that this plays out is slightly but very significantly different.
Yeah.
In the sense that Ellie almost drowns, so she's unconscious when she gets brought to the Fireflies.
Yeah, she's never aware that she was there.
She never even knew she saw the Fireflies until she wakes up with Joel in the car. Show Ellie was captured conscious, actually, in the smoke bomb, right? Oh, what's up, Marlene? You know.
Yeah. Oh, hey.
So they actually had to tell her something and then put her to sleep. Like, hey, we're going to do some surgery. So, yeah, I just wanted to point. That's all I wanted to point out with this email. Because I think that's important. You know what I mean?
I think that's fair. I know last week we discussed maybe having a section towards the latter half of this episode of like going into part two game spoilers.
I think that would have been better if Jimmy was here, because I've only played a third of part two.
OK.
And I know other podcasts have spent like 10 minutes at the end speculating what season two might include.
OK.
But I don't know with our listeners if we'll get a lot of value from that. Be just simply because I've only played a third of the second one.
Oh, I've played the second one three times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys can go hammer time on that.
I mean, well, there's something with this specific question that is, you know, a big part of the second game.
Yeah.
That I could speak to, but I don't know if I should.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think a lot of our listeners are not gamers.
Okay. Well, yeah, I agree.
I mean, we can maybe touch on it at the end.
Okay.
Just get a little verbal bumper. Maybe bring Satan.
But I agree with them. I agree with you. And this is still Jill's email, right?
It is.
I agree with you and Jill that like that we can infer Ellie's choice would have been to do that based off, because they really make a big point even in the show about like her, like, we're seeing this through no matter what. I have to see this through because it all has to be worth something. And I mean, yes, someone could argue like, yeah, but she's a kid. Does she really understand the choice he's making? Sure. And that's why I think that the final scene is such a good, you know, moral quandary that is great for debating.
It is. Mm-hmm. I agree. It's ripe. This next email comes in from Jen. Hey, guys. Love the pod.
Hello, Jen.
Terrible old Tony impressions and all. What?
Pardon me. You have opened the Pandora's the Tony's box. You can't just speak my name into the void, like, and not expect me to appear.
He's like Candyman. Tony, Tony, Tony. Wait, that's a band. I know the finale is a bit divisive. We were just talking about that as it relates to Joel exterminating an entire cell of Fireflies to quote unquote save Ellie. But I found what he did to be totally understandable. In many ways, the worst thing Ellie and Joel have faced are people not infected, from the soldier who killed Sarah to the fascist Fedra soldiers in the QZ to Kathleen and her crew to sexual predator David. These have been the biggest threats to Ellie and to Joel north of Clickers. Joel understands the nature of people in this post-apocalyptic world. And when he compares potentially saving humanity, something that's not even guaranteed should Ellie's brain be harvested, with his love for Ellie, it's not even close. He makes the calculation that humanity is not worth saving. Ellie is, as someone who also hates humans. I get it. Team Joel. Keep up the good work, guys. Jen, I agree. And the only thing I would add here, and again, there is at least one or two emails that are like vehemently against the Fireflies, as most people online are. Like, I got so many comments.
That's so fascinating.
In my TikTok video.
The difference between the game and the show audiences is really fascinating, because I remember when the game came out, people were like, Joel's the villain of the show. Like, what a great turn of events that the protagonist ends up being the villain of the whole franchise.
Yeah, I called Andy and I said, oh my God, Joel's the villain. That's crazy.
But in the series it ended, so many people were like, oh yeah, Joel, I get it. Yeah, that dude. You know, and I wonder, why exactly that is, I think the game does do a better job of kind of.
It's Pedro Pascal instead of a digital.
Yeah, people love Pedro Pascal. And I think the game does kind of paint a better brush of like what he's doing is wrong. Because I think the game even makes a bigger point of like Ellie would choose this were she not unconscious.
Yes.
The fact that she is unconscious and can't choose this is problematic. You kind of want to like.
But also, I think that the whole idea that there is a right or wrong answer is completely against what the game is actually saying.
Yeah, that's true as well.
The point that it's worth the conversation is the point, which seems pointless, but both sides are right. Both sides are wrong. It's the trolley problem, the classic philosophical problem. Should I kill five to save one? Is that morally wrong? Am I a murderer now because I actually chose an action here? Blah, 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 blah. Right.
Right.
It's the reverse trolley problem. Should I kill 20 to save one? It's
the whole like, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few versus like, does that mean you lose your humanity by doing that?
And a lot of people, and I said this on the air the first time I said this in the TikTok video, people just reiterated this point back at me. It's very frustrating, but I'm gonna try to calmly say, whether or not you believe that the fireflies can make a vaccine from this, whether or not you think a fungal vaccine is scientifically possible, whether or not you think they should have run more tests on Ellie and extracted her blood rather than jumping straight to extracting the fungus from her brain and killing her. It makes no sense to you, blah, 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 blah. So many people are suddenly experts in how vaccines are created and distributed because they read a subreddit from 2013. I think that's fascinating. However,
I mean, that's true for the plague we lived through recently.
Very, very true. However, that is not the point of this game or this show or this story. The willing suspension of disbelief. All you need to know is that the fireflies do believe they have a cure from this that they can make.
Yeah.
They do believe it will help and that they can distribute it. And Joel also believes that. How do I know this? Neil Druckmann has said so. He has said the fireflies do believe they're good people. They do believe they can make a cure. Right. Mm-hmm. That is not the fundamental issue you should be questioning here. Cause so many people get in the weeds of like, well, I've done extensive research and there's no way they could even make a vaccine from that. So therefore Joel was right because they were just going to kill her for no reason. No, you're making it too easy on yourself to pick a side. That defeats the point of the story.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It reminds me of the people who are watching a sci-fi movie and they go, a liquid wouldn't stay in that solidification that long in that kind of gravity.
You can't even hear explosions in space.
Exactly. That's like, okay, well, you know what I mean?
You're defeating the message.
Yeah. Yes.
We can get super pedantic on points like that all day.
And I don't want to shit on anybody for that. I just, again, I'm a little bit frustrated because I've read this argument hundreds of times in the past week, but I do think you're selling yourself short on a really interesting experience here. Because you are somewhat supposed to identify with Joel.
Yeah.
I do as well.
Yeah. That's the beauty of it.
My daughter or my son were on that table and I had any kind of skill set that Joel has, I guarantee you I'd be sitting in the car with my son or my daughter right now.
Yeah. Right.
But what's interesting about this thought experiment is also thinking that's maybe not the right thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think what you need to understand about Joel's character, in my opinion, is this is a very selfish act for him. He's not doing this to save Ellie. He's doing this because he can't bear to lose Ellie and he doesn't care if the world gets fucked. That's what's so interesting about this character choice.
Yes.
Ah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, saving Ellie is an added benefit, of course, but you're right. He's not doing it for her. He's doing it for him.
Yes.
And that's the beauty of the ending, I think.
Yeah, it is beautiful because we do sympathize with Joel. We 100%. Watched him lose his daughter. We don't want to see that again.
This is one of those things where like we've said it 100 times, I feel like at this point, but like
101, here we go.
Like what he's doing is he's condemning the humanity possibly from ever getting better. Like he's dooming us to like a slow extinction. Right. But we don't necessarily think he's bad for doing it. You understand why he's doing it. You might even do it yourself if you had that situation. Like you said, you would probably be in the same shoes. But that doesn't take away from the fact that he's still robbing humanity from a hope for a vaccine. And he's probably killing the only people who could possibly make that happen. We don't know if there are any other doctors in Fedra or any other Firefly cells. As far as we know, these are the only people left that could even have a chance at creating this, and he kills them all. And there you go. Like, and again, like I said, you don't condemn him for that act because it's a very understandable one. And you don't condemn the Fireflies and Marlene for wanting to do this to Ellie either, because from that perspective, they are literally saving millions of people. They're saving the human race. And you understand both sides of the argument. And it goes back to the great philosophical debate, like who is right? Who is wrong?
Yeah. There's no answer to the trolley problem. It's called the trolley problem. Mm-hmm. Anyway, again, there might be a few other emails basically surrounding that same kind of central question. And hopefully I don't yada, yada, yada them, but that is the biggest argument about this. That's what makes the story so special.
Right.
The fact that that is a constant debate. This next email comes in from Matthew A. Hey guys, my name is Matt A. from
Pearson, hello, Matt.
From Pearson, Georgia. And I've been a listener since Stranger Things season 4 and have been hooked ever since. Your humor and just all around friendship is right up my alley. Oh. The Last of Us is my favorite game franchise, so I was ecstatic when you guys decided to cover it. And Jimmy was a good addition. Also, shout out to Madison, neither of whom are here. I may have a bit of a crush on her, laughing emoji. Anyways, to my question. What are some things?
Madison wasn't here. She didn't hear that. Oh, no.
What are some things that you guys are most looking forward to in the second part of The Last of Us? I realize this question will only get answered if you decide to talk about season 2 and beyond, but I wanted to ask just in case. Any hoozle, thank you guys for all you do. Streaming Things is always a highlight of my week. I read this, Steve, at this juncture. I was hoping we could get into some kind of non-spoilery generic things about what we might be looking forward to in season 2.
Well, I think the biggest thing for people to look forward to in season 2 is just that the fact that what Joel does at the end of this season, there are consequences to that, what he does. And the way those consequences come up in part 2 are very thrilling. And I'm excited for people to see what happens in the story. What happens next?
My fervent wish is that the second game is every bit as, from what I've seen. So again, I've only played 10 hours of a 25 hour game. But I want them to fully commit. I don't want them to fall prey to the negative reaction of trolls over the past 5 years or whatever, because they have the opportunity now to kind of change things and re-win them over. Fuck.
Don't seriously. Oh my God, this is the Last Jedi Rise of Skywalker problem. Do not appease those specific trolls, because the people who are very outspoken about why part 2 of The Last of Us isn't good do not understand the moral of the story.
For the most part.
The most part. There are people who honestly have I think the second game has some pacing issues. That's all completely fine.
Well, one real quick, Dave Chen sent me an article because I was like, why don't you like the second game?
Dave Chen of Slash Filmcast?
Yes.
Name drop?
Well, I didn't mean to do that. I was just trying to say there are people that I highly respect that don't like the second game is all I was trying to say. And so I was really confused because all I'd ever run into is misogynists and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So I was really curious, what don't you like about the second game? You're very intelligent. So he sent me an article, and to paraphrase, because it's very long, it's like a college essay. It's a thesis, but essentially the first game is a lot about love. And I think a lot of people think the second game goes to a very regressive, dark place with these characters in this story. Well, it's like, well, what do we go through all that for then? Kind of thing. And it was a really legitimate argument.
Sure.
But other than that, there's a lot of derp-a-derp-a-der that don't like this.
And that's the crowd that I think the majority of people who dislike that game, the vocal majority who dislike the second game, are the misogyny type neckbeard people who are just like, oh, girls,
Sure.
And they lionize certain people in the franchise. That's like, that's not what you're supposed to be doing. Not in the way you're doing it. And it's weird. And you're right. I think Dave Chen does bring up a good point where the first game is about love. But it's also about, it's always about the main theme of both games are what are you willing to do for the people that you love? So in the first game in season 1 of Last of Us, Joel is willing to end humanity for the girl he loves. Right. And also for himself. And the second game has a very similar thing, but they do it in almost like a backwards way. Mm-hmm. And they do it in very interesting and surprising ways. And it reminds you why humanity is so beautiful. But it is a darker, harsher game than the first one. I think the story of
I know people listening right now that are like, what? I can't take anymore.
part two is darker. It's very harsh. It's cruel in some ways, but again, and this is the thing that makes this franchise so beautiful. It also is the most human and endearing. And there are moments that are just like, this is what humanity could, it's the opposite coin of what humanity is. There is this like the absolute cruelty of humanity, but the absolute love. And what do you do to protect the people that you do love? Or do you become cruel? It's stuff like that. And I still, to this day, I think the ending of part two may be the most I've ever cried and felt hollow in my life.
Yes.
And I can't talk about why, but there's a, I'm so excited for what they do. But yeah, if they strip away
Neil Druckmann dropped a season two poster teaser today.
I saw it.
Which is, I'm just telling the listeners, look on that for on Instagram or Twitter if you follow Neil Druckmann. But they've also said for sure that season two will be more than one season. We don't know how many. Mm-hmm. We suspect two seasons, because Craig Mazin's not a like a bunch of seasons guy. He's already said that. So I expect season two to be two seasons long. And you and Jimmy have both said there's a really perfect spot in the part two game for it to break off as a season ender, right?
Yeah, I could see where they could make that a season ender if they wanted to do that.
So that's interesting.
But yeah.
Thank
really
you,
excited
Steve.
About it.
Yeah, it's a lot. I know. I'm going to read most of this email. This one's actually really funny. I wonder how quick I can get through. It's a long one. This one comes in from longtime listener Andy from Liverpool. I'm going to do the whole thing in a Liverpool accent.
Liverpool.
Hi, guys. Just wanted to drop an email. I'm not going to do that. Just wanted to drop an email about the show as I had a few thoughts. First off, big fan of the show. Love listening to you guys every week. Special shout out to Jimmy, who's not here, but who's done a good job of stepping into Andy's shoes.
It's Jimmy.
He's been a great addition to the pod. I haven't played the game, but I watched the show purely as a newcomer. I have to say, as someone who's never played the game, I loved every minute of it. Sure, there were some episodes I wish were longer, particularly the last one, but overall, it's been a home run. I know a big criticism people had about the show was the lack of monsters, but I never felt that that was a negative. As a huge Stephen King fan, I always liked the idea that no matter how big and scary the creatures are, the real monsters are always the people. The show captured this perfectly. One thing that did surprise me, however, was how people think that Joel is the bad guy. Now, hear me out.
The bad guy.
My back is too broken to be doing any kind of gymnastics to reach that conclusion, so I'll try to keep it simple. Joel is her dad in almost every way one can be. As a parent, you're willing to do whatever it takes to protect your child, regardless of the consequences it has on yourself. Mm-hmm. A great parallel was drawn at the start and end of the final episode that perfectly demonstrated that. Ellie's mom was willing to take her own life after she was infected in order to save her. When Tess arrived, she then made a decision as a mother and lied to her about when she cut the cord in order to keep her alive. Marlene.
Marlene.
And he actually corrects that in the second email. I meant to do that. Marlene would have undoubtedly killed Ellie if she had thought she was infected. Fast forward to a present time and Joel was forced to make a decision as a father. Mm-hmm. I don't think he ever thought that they would have to kill her to find a cure, because as a viewer, I never thought that either. I thought, like Ellie did, that the secret was her blood. They all thought that, to pause, nobody knew she was going to have to die for this.
Right.
Just a lot of people believe Ellie would have still done it. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say, well, she's not old enough to make that decision. That's fair. But like those legalities don't apply in this apocalyptic world. Right. Like, of course, like, oh, you have to get a guardian and a lawyer. No, no, you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't.
And we know Joel's not signing off on it.
Definitely not. She's not going on that.
She's not doing it.
She's not going on that field trip.
She's not going on that field trip.
Back to Andy's email. When he made the decision to lie to her to keep her alive, he was mirroring what her mother had done all those years earlier.
I like that.
I like that too, Andy. This, I feel, was also deliberate, as it demonstrates that he was acting as much as a parent as her real mother was, right? Andy goes on, a child is your life, your world, your everything. As a father of three boys, I know this is clear as I know the sky is blue. The show and clearly the game demonstrated this by how Joel became after Sarah died. The world as he knew it ended. It took finding another daughter 20 years later to change that for him. If Joel had gotten Ellie to the Fireflies a lot earlier, then perhaps his decision would have been different. But instead, he made the decision that every parent would in that situation. He protected his own world, his daughter. Absolutely. Annie Hussle, thanks for taking the time to read these ramblings. And I look forward to what new shows you have lined up in the future. In the words of that famous wordsmith, Jerry Springer, take care of yourselves and each other.
Ooh,
Andy from Liverpool.
You don't often get a Jerry Springer quote.
Andy, turn it off if your kids are in the car or the room. Andy goes on. P.S. Andy, turn it off. P.S. Last time I sent an email about Stranger Things, you read it out loud, but made jokes about cum in it. So I was unable to let my boys hear it. If you do read it, then try to keep the vulgarity to a minimum, please. P.P.S. Don't read out the P.S. as it will contain the word cum if you read it out.
You betrayed his trust. He asked you one thing to do.
I told him to get the kids paused because I think that's fucking hilarious. He couldn't trust me after writing comedy gold. P.P.P.S. Best not to read out the email. Now.
Oh my God. I'm sorry, Andy.
Now, hold on. Let me walk you back through this, how it occurred in my mind.
Okay. Let's hear it. Play by play.
Andy from Liverpool. P.S. Last time I sent an email about Stranger Things, you read it out loud but made jokes about cum in it. It's way funnier in an English accent. And we all agreed on that.
Yeah, we can agree.
Andy, we love you. I know you're a longtime friend of the pod. That was a very long, heartfelt, thoughtful email.
Bring the kids back. I think we're done.
And I loved it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
bring them back.
Well, we can't guarantee that for the rest of the show here.
Oh, that's true. But he probably wants them to be like, look, kids, the men on the radio are reading daddy's email.
Yeah. The men with the faces for radio. I like your funny words, magic man. All right, moving on. Our next email comes in from Zali M. Hi, Streaming Things. I'm writing to you from Australia. I wonder what the apocalypse would look like here. I'm not a gamer, so I'd never even heard of The Last of Us until one of my friends told me Pedro Pascal was doing a zombie apocalypse show. I decided to watch it when I heard you guys would be covering it, and I'm so glad I did. I had no context for it whatsoever, and all I knew was zombies. So I went in completely blind and came out absolutely loving it. I definitely look forward to the 12:30 p.m. on Mondays, which is when the episodes were released here. Damn!
P.M. Well, that's true.
Noon on Mondays. It's Australia.
Yeah.
How much crying I would be doing on my couch. In that train of thought, I thought I would share the top five things that made me cry in chronological order. 1, Bill and Frank's episode. 2, Sam's death.
Yes.
3, Ellie and Riley after they get bit. Yeah. 4, Annie giving birth to Ellie. 5, the giraffes. 5 great cry moments. Amazing cry moments.
I love how you threw in a happy cry in there, too.
Yes.
With the draft.
Yeah.
Not with like anything else.
Sorry for the long email. They get way longer than that. And thank you for the coverage of the show. I started listening because of Stranger Things, and I'm glad I stayed for The Last of Us. I mainly read that because he said, I wonder what the apocalypse would look like in Australia. You ever seen Mad Max, my friend?
What about a fungal apocalypse? Mad Max would not look like a fungal.
That's not an apocalypse. This is an apocalypse.
No, it's kind.
Tasmanian devil.
What are Tasmanian devil? What are some of your top cry moments? Do you remember?
I thought we'd do a fun thing where we would also, dude, he picked them all. Those are the ones.
And those are good ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are all the big cry cries.
Man.
You remember me? When did you look? You looked over and I was crying.
You were crying at one point.
I'm crying a lot, all the time. As soon as you saw me.
But I caught you again. Usually I don't catch it.
I busted you again. He treats it like I'm doing something dirty. He's like, hey, throws me tissues.
Knock it off. No crying in this house. There's no crying in baseball.
Yeah.
Those are all the good ones. I think for me, the one that got me most is probably Sam's death.
That's tough.
Yeah.
Sam's death is tough, but I was fucked up by Anna, like just seeing Ashley Johnson.
Yeah.
Hearing that voice, giving birth to another Ellie and like the amount of sacrifice. And they used that like a real baby. And like, it was just like, it was a lot for me, man. My daughter was just born.
From the head up that was blue mostly everywhere else. I don't know if you know that.
Baby's name was Nabo.
Nabo.
Our next email comes in from Rosemary B. Hi, guys. Big fan of you guys discovering the pod during Stranger Things season 4. Keep up the great work.
Oh, real quick. Mm-hmm. I want to add on to the Anna's birth scene.
Oh, okay.
Real quick. So a friend of mine who also listens to the show texted me after this episode. And I'm not going to say her name just because I don't know if she realized I was going to do this. But she wrote to me, random commentary. Having just birthed another human 2 weeks ago, congratulations. I have no fucking clue how Ellie's mom was able to run or even climb stairs while being that close to delivery. Jesus fucking Christ.
She's very strong. Neither of us can speak to that, Steve.
Right. No, but she did bring up a good point after that, which I thought was interesting.
I'm pretty sure I could do it.
I'm pretty sure I could. She's got to bear down. But she continued, and it didn't look like she was actually staying there. It was totally empty. So do you think the Fireflies were, that was their base of operations? And if not, how did they find her? Because she does kind of bring up a good point. It was like a very empty space.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Wait, why was she staying there?
Yeah, like, do you think the place she ended up in, that farmhouse, do you think that was like where they were staying locally?
No, I think she was supposed to meet Marlene there for maybe supplies or medicine for the baby, or maybe she knew she was going into labor and she wanted Marlene to help, right?
And that's how Marlene found them.
I think she was wanting to smuggle the baby out so they wouldn't go, probably wouldn't go into Fedra, which is fucked up of Marlene to just drop it off at Fedra, right? But yeah, I think I got the impression they met there often and Marlene was late, which is why she ended up getting fucked by the runner, like chased by the runner and stuff.
Yeah.
Because Marlene's kind of apologetic, remember? Like, I'm sorry, I'm here now. Mm-hmm. Ooh, your leg looks a little pussy. You know? So
not good.
That's the way I read that scene. And this is apparently, somebody emails us about it. We'll read that soon. But I know that this is canon. Like, you know, Neil has talked about this. It's in one of the notes, I think, that, like Easter egg things that you can find in the game as you're playing. Like a note from Anna that like implies that she's been bitten. And the person that emails does a really good job of explaining why.
Are we going to get to that email?
We will.
Okay, cool.
But Rosemary says, a random question might have been asked before. In The Last of Us universe, did the cordyceps spread to other mammals? Has there anything ever been said about the outbreak affecting animal populations? Steve?
Yes, there is a hint that this does happen. It's not widely visible in the game. Like as you're playing it, you don't come across like infected dogs or anything like that. But the scene when they go to the college and they find the monkeys.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that in the show? They find little monkeys and yes. It's a big thing. Well, in the game, you can like kind of like read what they were actually doing with the monkeys there. They were trying to find a cure and they were using the monkeys as test lab monkeys, essentially. And one of the doctors that was in charge of it was like, you know, he was taught, you can like find like recordings where he's talking like day one, the test results didn't go very well. And then you kind of follow that guy's story while you're playing the level.
I failed today's Wordle.
Well, he's mad because the Fireflies are like, this research isn't going anywhere. We're packing up everything and we're moving west to Utah where they end up. And he's like, what a waste. Well, we could have found something, but I guess it's no harm in keeping these monkeys. And he releases them. And then one of the monkeys bites him while it's being freed. He's like, oh no, I'm infected now, essentially. So like, even though these monkeys don't, I guess they don't get all fungal, they can still pass the fungus, the cordyceps through their own bites. And that guy ends up shooting himself and you can find his body in his last testament. And it's kind of a funny moment in the game where it's like, this is the last will and testament of Dr. So-and-so. And Joel's like, Jesus Christ. And like fast forwards it.
Yeah.
To like when he tells
that's
him
when
like
he's in the, like the pipe, right?
Is it what?
I think he's in like a pipe when he finds that last tape and he he's crawling through some a ductwork or something.
Oh no, you're with his body when you find the last tape.
There's one,
which is like in an office building. Cause then after they hear where they've gone, that's when you see, David's men break into the hospital.
Yeah. Crazy shit though. But yeah, I forgot about the monkeys. Like it's verified that they had the cordyceps. Them damn cordyceps. Just keep naming everybody. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Getting to know yourself can be a lifelong process, especially because we're always growing and changing. Every 5 years, I look back and I'm like, I don't even know that guy. I don't like that guy. My values have changed completely. And that's a good thing. That means I'm growing as a person. You know, I learn new things about myself all the time when I look back, and things that used to be okay with me no longer are. I maybe want something completely different out of life. And therapy is all about deepening your self-awareness and understanding, because sometimes we don't know what we want or why we react the way we do until we talk through things. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist who can take you on that journey of self-discovery from wherever you're at right now. And that can be a tough thing to find. I work in the mental health field, have for many years. And even then, looking for a therapist can be an exhausting process, especially dealing with all the ins and outs of insurance. And eventually you're just like, I just won't worry about it, right? But what BetterHelp does is it connects you online. It's all entirely online. You can shop through different therapists to try to meet your needs. And then you can switch therapists rather easily if you're not jibing with the one that you've got. And I personally have, this is me getting real for a second. I've been trying to talk myself into securing a therapist for myself for a long time, like multiple years. I still to this day have not done it. I have no personal experience with therapy except maybe you could call it group therapy with the 12-step stuff that I do. But I've got like severe anxiety, all kinds of shit going on. And I know that I need a therapist. And so I really like this sponsor, just connecting people easily right where they're at, right in their home, with something that they probably desperately need. Discover your potential with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/streamingthings today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/streamingthings. This next email comes in from Tammy W. Hello, guys.
Hi, Tammy.
Wanted to write in and give this opinion of the finale. Everyone is talking about the moral dilemma Joel decided when he killed everyone to save Ellie. See what I'm saying? I knew there'd be a lot of these. Instead of letting her be used to save the world from the pandemic. I disagree that there's any such moral dilemma, at least in the way the show presented the characters and the information. I'm a show watcher only. Number one, I do not think we have any information to say that Ellie was willing to die to save the world. I disagree. 1,000%. Mm-hmm. And she was not given that choice for us to know what she would have chosen. So podcasters, I listen to about three of y'all. Keep assuming that Ellie would have been agreed to die to save the world based on when Joel offered to turn back. And she said, we finished this. But I don't think that was enough to say she wanted to die. Instead, I believe she wanted to get to the Fireflies to see what they would do to use her to save the world, not ever thinking it would mean her death. And apparently Marlene believed that Ellie would have declined as she did not ask her and lied to her instead. Now, a couple things. I think you're 100% correct that Ellie never considered the fact that she might die necessarily. I do think there's a lot of evidence in the actions and the way that she presents herself to suggest that she would decide to sacrifice herself. You can see the way that she, how much effort she puts into saving Joel when he's been stabbed by the baseball bat. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing that she endures with David is just simply because she refused to leave Joel to die. Right. That's just one person. And she talks frequently and she's always sees the best in people, how quickly she reacts to Sam and Henry. And she curtails Joel's murderous tendencies frequently throughout the show. She has a great amount of faith in humanity. But I agree with you that she doesn't know about it. But I also don't think Marlene believed Ellie would decline. And that's why she didn't tell Ellie. I think she's honest in what she tells Joel, that she didn't tell Ellie mostly because she didn't want Ellie to know she was going to die. Like, it's easier this way. She thinks she's going to sleep. Mm-hmm. Don't worry. She's not stressing or anything. It's all good. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, I do think that was her intent.
That's interesting because I agree with you, Chris. For slightly different reasons, the same, but also slightly different reasons. I think that another reason why you can say that it's to me, they lay the groundwork for Ellie would make this choice if she had been given it, is because it goes back to like her incident with Riley. They both get bitten. Her best friend dies and she doesn't know why. So she has this purpose. Like, there's a reason why I survived this. I have a purpose. I have a reason for being alive and not have died with my friend. And if she was given the choice, like, oh, your purpose is to save mankind, not only all the points you brought out about how she actually cares about a lot of people and she's trying to save a lot of people, but that is her fulfilling her purpose. Yeah. And I think she would do that. And on the same coin with Marlene, I think Marlene doesn't tell her. I kind of like what you said, like, you know, she cares about Ellie in a way where she doesn't want that to come across. But I also think cynically, Marlene doesn't even want to take the chance that this person would say no, because she thinks
that's kind of what
100% important.
That's kind of what Tammy's saying too.
Yeah. But I do disagree that there is nothing in the show or in the first game that would specify that Ellie would make this choice if she were given. Now, and that's the problem with the Fireflies at the end. They don't actually allow her to make that choice, or at least we don't see that in the show. And that is the problem. But I think people aren't really kind of picking up on some of the things that this character is saying and doing leading up to this moment.
Yes. She goes on to say, number two, Joel did not choose between saving one little girl in the whole world, because we don't have information to know that what the doctor had planned for Ellie was a surefire way to create a vaccine. We touched on this earlier. Mm-hmm. At best, Ellie was being killed on a gamble. That's not a moral dilemma. Again, I think the point of the story is to assume that all those people involved fully believe that they can make a cure, at least. Right.
Yeah.
Number three, the research should have continued with Ellie to determine if there was a way to use her to cure the population without murdering her. Again, if the story would have been effective on a 9-month timeline, I think Neil Druckmann would have done this. But I think you're supposed to yada, 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 the necessary blood tests and studying that they do. Right.
Right.
You're supposed to take the neurosurgeon at value. I've seen people make TikToks talking about, well, the world ended in 2013 in the game or whatever, 2003 in the show. So neurosurgery technology in 2003 is the best this guy would have. He looks to be about 46 years old. That means he was 25 when the world ended. He wouldn't even have gone through residency yet. And I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ, guys, this, you're just ruining the story for yourself.
You're going down the rabbit hole a little bit too much.
Yeah. I think I'm not saying anything to you, Tammy. I agree with you. I would save my kid, but I do think to take the moral dilemma out of this story is to simplify it to George Romero's zombie show, Walking Dead later seasons kind of way. Right. And I don't think that's the intention of this particular story. I think it's supposed to make you think like, huh,
what would I do?
Yeah. Even if you had to, you know, choose between your kid and a surefire way to 100 years from now, restart the human race, because this would take a while to even affect anything, you know?
Yeah.
A few extra immune people is all it would do initially. Would you do that? Knowing that in your lifetime, you would never see any benefit. You would only see what you traded. You would only see the loss.
You're planting a seeds to a tree you'll never see.
And if you wouldn't, are you brave enough to admit that that means you're a selfish person? Oh, that's tough, right? That's what the story is asking you to do. So anyway, I think that's fascinating. Some people do not. And that's fair.
Yeah.
We got quite a few more. Let me try to get going. I'll read as many as we can. I know we're running late.
Keep doing it. This is fun.
The next email comes in from Abby. That might be a triggering name for game fans. Hi, Chris. Jimmy and Steve. My name is Abby. Doing it again. And I'm writing in from Indianapolis. I found your show during the great boom of ST4. And have been here ever since. I love listening to you guys and shoot the shit about things you're watching, and even finally started Yellow Jacket so I could keep up with you. So thank you for getting me into that masterpiece. Awesome. I'm glad you like it.
Oh, yay. It's good.
Side note, I grew up in Union, Kentucky, and love catching the occasional Florence Y'all
reference. I lived in Union, Kentucky.
You did. I was there. Yeah. That's where we filmed season three.
Things. Yeah. Stranger Things season three.
That's in Union. Anywho, that's her words again. I've been excited about the Last of Us.
You have to keep pointing that out.
Yeah, I think people are just like, you can't just put that in people's emails, guy. No, they write it. I've been excited about the Last of Us adaptation, and it did not disappoint. Bella Ramsey blew me away this season. And Pedro Pascal was incredible as Joel. I laughed when I saw that they filmed the last episode with a real giraffe. One just like you, I thought it was bad CGI. I was wondering if there was a moment for each of you when you felt most personally connected to a character. For me, it was when Ellie finally burst out and told Riley to stay there and then kissed her. I am a lesbian, and I just felt that at that moment in my gut and cried. The fear and then the relief was so real, and I felt like a teenager again in that moment. There's so much more I could say, but this is already a novel. Thank you so much for the great content, and I always have a good time. Bear down, Abby.
Yes. Bear down.
Steve, is there any particular moment where you felt most personally connected to a character?
Oh man, this is hard. Just coming out of the blue like this, I'm trying to like think of all like the past moments and
scanning moments.
Cannot find them.
Searching for moments. Error.
Oh goodness. connecting. Oh, you know, maybe I talked about this. This isn't so much like I connected with this character, but it, to me, it's the most meaningful interaction in the game. And that's the very final scene where Ellie's like, she lays it all out on the table for Joel. Like, hey, you know, my friend died, then Tess died, and all that had to mean for stand for something. Is what you told me about the Fireflies true? And Joel's trying to protect her, but also like, he doesn't want to like tell her the truth.
I killed a lot of people to be able to hang out with you.
Yeah. I really want to teach you how to play guitar. he doesn't want to risk that relationship and being honest with her. And just the way she kind of looks at him, and she doesn't really believe him, but she has no reason to distrust him really, but she doesn't believe him. And just that, like, okay. Like that, just the resignation to trusting this person you don't believe is heartbreaking to me. And the delivery in both the game and the show is just so impactful. And I love that moment. And I don't know if I personally like see myself in that, because I guess maybe I do, because we've all kind of been there with people where, you know, they're lying to you and you wish they wouldn't be. You're like, God, I really wish you weren't lying to me. I feel like you are, but I have no choice but to trust you and go with it. Because if I don't, that might upend my view of the world or my standing. And so, yeah, I guess it's that. Yeah.
I love Ashley Johnson, the way she talks about that when she talks about, because she's spoken about it personally. And she's like, when I watched that moment, she said, you know that Ellie knows that he's lying. And that their relationship will never be the same. And she's really sad about that. But also, what can she do about it? And I'm going to cry. Think about it. Like the way she describes it, it was like, oh, you know.
And you get that.
Yeah.
You get that in the performances. And it's just such a simple concept, but it's played masterfully. Mm-hmm.
I think for me, and this might sound strange, but it's it's Anna giving birth to Ellie, which of course I didn't give birth to my children. But did hold them straight out of Compton, or you know what I mean?
straight out of Compton.
That's a life changing moment each time where you're like, holy fuck, little human made life, me in trouble. I feel like a 10-year-old in my brain. So how am I going to take care of somebody? All that in like, you know, a million other thoughts in about 0.8 seconds run through your brain. And when you look at that little human being, like I was just looking at my daughter today. She crawled for the first time today.
Aww.
And it's like, I can't describe how much I'd love you. I can't, you know what I mean? Like, holy shit. I hope nothing bad ever happens to you. I hope you've experienced zero pain. I hope the world just falls at your feet and you know, that's not true. And you're like, oh, I am upset in advance at the pain you will surely experience.
Right.
Ah, you know, all of that goes through your brain every time you look at him. Right. And you can see that in Ashley Johnson's performance as Anna, when she looks at that baby, she's already found out she's going to die. She's already been bitten. You know what I mean? And still, she already just fought like a fucking zombie when stabbed it with a knife. And then the baby popped out while she was doing that. And still, she picks it up and just smiles like, oh, my God. Like, it still hits her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's that moment, I think, that resonates the most with me. So thank you. Great question, Abby.
Wonderful question.
Our next email comes in from Kimberly M. It's me again.
Hi, Kimberly.
I just watched The Last of Us season finale and wanted to share some thoughts and funnies. I think that in Ellie's mind, the reason she is so quiet all the way through that episode is not just the trauma, but that she had to take a life, And the moment she was all about the stabby stabs. But later it hit her that she had killed someone, even if it was a horrible person. So in her mind, saving everyone was what she wanted to do to redeem herself. That was taken away from her by the circumstances Joel was describing, but she was not buying it, of course. That's what we're just talking about.
Yeah.
And I think that taking your life is part of the trauma, mm-hmm. you know? But anyway, we've watched this whole series with my son, who's 25, and played the games all the way through. So he was saying when they are fixing to do some killing, oh, they're about to have a Joel problem. Or that guy has a real bad Ellie problem. It just makes me laugh.
We're about to have a Joel problem.
It just makes me laugh because he gets so excited when it syncs up with the game for the parts he likes. He keeps foreshadowing how the second game sucks, but I hope they diverge from the parts that do suck. Again, we've already talked about that.
Yeah, second game does not suck.
No hate to your son.
Hot take. I'm one of the few people who think the second game is better than the first game.
That is very few people.
It is very few people.
But they fervently believe that.
But I've been flirting with the idea. Like, I haven't been like confident enough in saying
you
it.
Can.
But now the more and more I think about it, the more and more I'm like, yeah, I like the second game a lot. I mean, both are masterpieces, but I still think part two should be taught in schools. It's that good.
All right, kids, open your controllers to
Level
62. I don't know, man. I tried to make it work. I tried to make the joke work. What are some of your hopes for the next season? I don't think we can talk about that as much as I would like.
Yeah, because I already know. I already know what.
All we hope is that it, unfortunately, for your son, follows it extremely faithfully.
Yeah.
Because we do think it is a story worth being told. My biggest disappointment in the series is the amount of infected. And I know we can't just have jump scare after jump scare, but it seems like so much of the landscape that they're just not an issue anymore. And I think that I agree with you. They could have used a couple more moments where I really think infected would have helped, especially the episode with David. But I also feel like it's good and makes sense. It's logical. Like, it's been going on for 20 years. There's a finite amount of people, and these infected die too. They're organic creatures.
Yeah.
So it's like, eventually they're not going to be everywhere. They're going to be mostly in cities. Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember where I saw this, but somebody, maybe it was on Twitter, Discord or something, but someone was like, I don't understand how this is an apocalyptic show. Because we never see clickers. We never see the infected hardly ever. And when we do see people, they seem to be living just fine. And I kind of really disagree with that, because we see in Kansas City specifically, when the horde comes out, you can see how the world would end from that. Even Infection Day, the very first episode, when we saw a little bit of what happened on Infection Day, you can see easily how this would become a awful, awful problem very, very quickly.
Yes.
And it makes sense that now 20 years on, the survivors of that event and who have lived in this world for 20 years are A, used to it, B, have found a way to keep living through it despite the challenges, but also people aren't living where they think infected are going to show up. And so that means when the infected do show up, it is a huge, big deal, and it matters because oh, they've broken through, you know. I do agree that I would have loved to have seen more of them, but again, I like, especially the last three episodes, we were kind of like, oh, when are we going to see more infected? And all I could think of was like, the infected they're not part of the story. Like, all the things I was thinking of, like, if we're going to tell the story of the game, what could they cut and what do they have to keep in? And they would have to have cut all the infected sequences. Because at the end of the day, nothing really narrative happens during those
sure.
in the latter half of the game. That being said, I still would have loved to have seen it because they're such cool zombie designs. That's so cool. But they did make one little infected scene with Anna in the last episode. But we just want a bloater. Give us another bloater, guys.
One thing she said was that maybe Tony took out all these zombies above ground.
That's why they went underground.
There was a lot more in that email.
Y'all were making fun of me, but 25 years ago, I single-handedly stuffed them back in the hole once they came.
That was a real pot shot.
That was a real pot shot back in. My eyes aren't what they used to be.
Speaking of Tony.
Oh, Tony's not going to lie to you.
We got an email. Where's it at? I was just had it open. I'm an idiot. Oh, this comes in from Madison H. Hey, guys.
Madison.
Just listening to you first thing on Monday morning when you brought up learning the origin of Ellie's knife. Thought you'd find it interesting that there is a graphic novel / comic called The Last of Us American Dreams, written by Neil Druckmann, that shows how Ellie and Riley meet. And in it, they interact with Marlene. Marlene eventually gives Ellie the switchblade and said it was Anna's. So this was already canon, not just from the game. Love you guys. And then disappointed this season is done, so I won't get to listen to y'all on Mondays. Yellow Jackets is a bit too graphic for me. Though I have to say, I'm happy to have to not have to hear Tony time again for quite some time. Thanks, Madison. Madison, that wounds me. That's a terrible wound that you've created in me. And also, you don't know us at all if you think we won't bring up Tony as much as we want to, damn it, in random properties. We could be talking about Pride and Prejudice
and just Tony time. Oh, look at that hand flex.
You think all the emails telling Chris to stop saying any hoozle has stopped him?
No. We do think we appreciate your support. I'm disappointed we won't have you for the last, for Yellow Jackets. I think if you can handle The Last of Us, I think you're good with pretty much anything. But I can't speak to that. You're you.
I would say
Yellow Jackets is more
Yellow Jackets is gory.
Body horror, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's far more gory.
But I it's think. Fun. There's fun hearts and goos and slices.
Hearts and goos.
You're right. It actually
but if,
is
yeah,
much
if,
more graphic.
If you don't like Yellow Jackets, again, we're going to be doing some individual films for the next few weeks based off of chosen by our patrons.
Guaranteed Class Action Park will have zero Tony Time references. Wow. If I can guarantee that. No,
don't write a check your ass can't catch, my friend. I built these roller coasters.
Whee! Our next
Tony
email.
Tony likes the cup rides at Disneyland.
Our next email comes in from Corey S. Honestly, I really enjoyed this all through. Not a single episode disappointed me in the slightest. Even though I'm doing a playthrough of the game alongside of the show, I'm still on the very edge of my seat while playing the finale. Or while watching the finale, excuse me. As for my bit of a pills, baby moment.
Pills,
if you
baby.
Need more Ashley Johnson in your life, she was quite the regular on the NPC drama Blind Spot. Love the pod and how, with my access to Showtime, I can now finally listen to my boys talk some Yellow Jackets.
Hell yeah.
That being said, now that by the time you see this will be a week removed from the show, what's your final thoughts on season one of Last of Us and what's your breakout performance of this season? Me personally, all in all, I think it's like a 9.4 out of 10. Phenomenal show. I love it. I love Craig Mason's stuff. I can't speak to anything specifically, but the overall breakout performance is ooh. Bella Ramsey, I think.
Bella.
I had to think about it for a second. I knew what Bella could do. I was pretty sure she was perfectly cast because she was, you know,
Liana Mormont.
Yeah. What I'm trying to say, what I felt was so perfect about it. Like, a lady, right? She was 11 years old back then, by the way, but that had moxie. See, she would die trying to fight a giant.
You know? She has moxie.
And I could see like, oh, that's perfect for Ellie because she, like, she's really funny. She's like a really good kid. She likes, you know, she's kind to people, but she also will fucking kill you. Right.
Yeah.
How do they cast for that? And so I was like, that's perfect. Right. But still she shocked me by the emotional depths that she was able to go into. I was very pleasantly surprised at how good of that, of an actor, how powerful a performance that she gave. So I have to give it, I think, to Belly. To Bella. What do you think, Steve?
Let's see. Overall, I think I would rate the season an 8.5. I really liked it. Yeah, okay. I really liked it. in terms of breakout performance, I think I also have to go with Bella. Like, I know, like, Pedro Pascal is the new hotness, right? But we all knew that Pedro was amazing. Like, I've loved Pedro Pascal since the first time I really kind of took note of him in Game of Thrones. But she was surprising. And this show, actually, there are a lot of really, really great performances that kind of surprised me from Javon, who played Sam, and who played his brother, Henry.
I forget.
I don't have his name in front of me. Lamar Johnson. And then you have, Melanie Lynskey was great in her role. You have Merle Dandridge, who was fucking great as Marlene.
You know, in hindsight, though, I will say that, like, the one
Scott
thing.
Scott Shepard as David was really good.
David was crazy. It was too good.
Nick Offerman surprised the hell out of me. I love Nick Offerman, but I didn't expect just how good he was going to be in the show.
I did something being a week removed. One thing I have thought about is, like, if I was going to change anything, I would remove, as much as I love her. And if you listen to my Yellow Jackets coverage, you know how much I love her. I would remove the Melanie Lynskey plot line that they added, because then you'd have more time for some of the other things that I did want, that, you know, that they said they moved along a little too much. Cause I actually, a lot of people rank 7 really low, Left Behind. In their episode rankings, I've seen.
That's so surprising.
And even a lot of people rank 3 pretty low too. And everybody kind of argues, well, it's great, it's beautiful, but it kind of breaks the pace, right? I disagree. I think those two episodes are really important for some of the emotional hits that we get.
Yeah.
And the themes. But I don't think the Kathleen thing really worked the way they wanted it to, because they didn't spend the extra time. So if anything, if I had to choose to leave that in, but make 10 episodes, I think the show would be almost perfect.
Yeah.
But if you're going to do 9, take that out. And just kill some zombies and shit.
Yeah.
Because it really kind of yada, yada, yada. And then as soon as she died, it was like, oh, that's over. Like we built up. What? You know, they kind of, if you'd never played the game, you probably would have thought she's going to come back in episode 8 and, you know, or like it's going to be a thing. Right? And a lot of people joke every single episode of the show would have been a season of The Walking Dead. And if you as a previous fan of that show, that is 100% true. They would have spent a whole season and a half in Kansas City.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it's funny because you bring up a good point, because the whole Kansas City escapade was really the only two-parter. Don't get hot. It was the only two-parter, which was interesting because in the game, like, that's not really like a big story heavy section. You meet Henry and Sam.
Yeah, you wander around the
thing and you like, just kind of wander around
on the edge of a lake for a minute.
Yeah.
You know, remember that where you're going through the boat and stuff?
Yeah. I think I agree with you, even though like I really liked what they did with their character and like I love the backstory they kind of added to them. It wasn't the most needed thing.
I agree.
But I agree with myself. I'm glad you do. I do appreciate what they added with Bill. And of course, the Left Behind thing has to be in there. I think the Left Behind episode is incredibly important.
Yes, I agree. Because I've thought about that a lot. I was like, so that's what came to mind with a week removed thing. Our next email, a quick one, comes in from Lauren F. After that amazing finale, I started a rewatch. I've caught some things I missed before. I live in KC and I noticed they pass Worlds of Fun as they're driving into Kansas City. I don't know what that is, but hell yeah, for KC in episode 4. Pretty cool. It looks so accurately correct for being 2003 when the outbreak started. Also, while watching episode 3, I caught myself saying, that's a lot of pills, baby.
Pills, baby.
Out loud when Bill puts the pills in the Frank's wine. I was the only one to laugh. I like the idea of Lauren being the only Streaming Things fan. Anyway, you guys are awesome. Love listening to you all. Steve, your Dementor, Sniper Tony, and Dr. B impressions are hilarious. Chris, I love your quick responses and jokes. Thank you so much for listening, Lauren. You. We love that.
Well, is Lauren implying that she said that joke in the Discord watch along?
Oh, I didn't get that idea. I thought she was saying that she said that with like family around or something.
Oh, okay. Either way, that's kind of funny. Like pills, baby. And people nodded on the joke.
Crickets.
Like, okay.
Yeah. I 100% pictured it with like just a bunch of strangers around. And she's going, pills, baby. I do that too. Like when I take my vitamins and shit in the morning, my wife doesn't laugh either. So I'm with you on that. Let's see.
Which, by the way, real quick, again, Pills Baby is our best-selling shirt ever. So thank you guys who bought a Pills Baby shirt. Tony Time is not far behind from what I understand.
It's Tony Time.
Oh, yep. It's Tony Time to overtake that bullshit other shirt.
All right. Let me see here. It's getting so late. I'm trying to find a shorter email. Our next email comes in from Hunter L.
Hunter L?
Hey, y'all.
Hi.
Longtime listener. First time emailing. I have thoroughly enjoyed your coverage of the show because I'm a huge fan of these games and a huge fan of their podcast. When y'all covered the finale episode, there was a little bit of a conversation about how the story of Ellie's immunity in the HBO show is not quite canon to the game. This is also a popular opinion through some of the online discourse. But I have a theory with some supporting evidence that it is canon. This is the email I referenced earlier.
What's not canon? Sorry, I missed that first part.
The fact that Ellie's immunity is derived...
From her mom getting bitten at birth.
Yes.
Okay.
That is canon, is what Hunter. That's what she's saying. So in this section of the game called The Hunt, you can start playing as Ellie. Of course, in her backpack she has artifacts like Joel does. If you go through her artifacts, there are things in her backpack like the switchblade, the pun joke book, the picture of Joel with his daughter Sarah, which we know Ellie gives to Joel toward the Joel gets to Ellie towards the end of the game, I think is what she was trying to say. And there's also a note, or no, she does give it to Joel. That's right. There's also a note from Ellie's mom. You have the option to read the note, and this is what it says. Ellie, this is a quote from the note from the game. Ellie, I'm going to share a secret with you. I'm not a big fan of kids, and I hate babies. And yet, I'm staring at you, and I'm just awestruck. You're not even a day old, and holding you is the most incredible thing I've done in my life. A life that is about to get cut a little short. Marlene will look after you. There's no one in this world I trust more than her. When the time comes, she'll tell you all about me. Don't give her too much of a hard time. Try not to be as stubborn as me. I'm not going to lie. This is a pretty messed up world. It won't be easy. The thing you... Why am I crying? I'm a fucking loser, dude. The thing you always have to remember is that.
No, you're great, man. I love that you care.
The thing you always have to remember is that life is worth living. Find your purpose and fight for it. I see so much strength in you. I know you'll turn out to be the woman you're meant to be forever. Your loving mother, Anna. Make me proud, Ellie. In my opinion, the most important part of this letter to Ellie is the second line. You're not even a day old. And holding you is the most incredible thing I've done in my life, a life that is about to get cut a little short. We can infer two things from this line. Number one, of course, Ellie was just born less than 24 hours ago. Two, Anna knows her life is about to be cut short, inferring that she was bitten by an infected, and she's taking the time to write the letter before giving Ellie to Marlene. We know that when someone is bitten, they don't turn into infected right away. They can sometimes have up to 2 days of quote unquote normalcy before officially turning, even though the letter doesn't explicitly say so. It's very easy to assume that Anna was bitten while pregnant with Ellie, or she was bitten before she could cut the umbilical cord, like in the HBO series. Neil Druckmann is very intentional with his story writing. This letter is in the game is specific about Ellie just being born, and he hints that Anna was bitten. So to me, it can't just be a coincidence. I would love to hear your all's thoughts. Happy streaming. Hunter, I think that's brilliant. I'm right there with you.
I agree. I 100% agree. In the moment when we recorded last week, I didn't remember this letter in particular, but it has since been brought to my attention. It's like, oh yeah, I do remember that. Cool. Yeah. But I agree with you completely. I think that's definitely inferred. And I love that we got to see it in the show. Like, that's really cool. It was one of our favorite moments of that whole episode. And even the whole series for me personally, I love that scene.
Letter, baby.
Letter.
Our next email comes from Megan W. Hey, guys.
Hi.
I've been with you for only a year now, and I continue coming back.
Been with us only a year.
I don't know why you're coming back, but we love it that you do.
I'm so happy you're here.
I now hope for new shows just so I can hear you guys break it down. Episode 9, you guys talk about how the Fireflies are the bad guys and couldn't realistically make a cure.
Did we talk about that? We talked about
how people believe that, I think. But even realistically, in today's world, cures don't always work or need multiple test subjects. Sure. We don't know if Joel 100% believed a cure could be made, or even the Fireflies think that. We do know that the Fireflies think that. That's from Neil Druckmann, the creator. He has said they do believe that. Mm-hmm. They do think that they're the good guys, right? For sure. That's what he has said. So it's a maybe. Ellie would be killed and maybe they would have a cure. I don't think it's fair to put that on her, especially for a maybe. Also, yes, Ellie wanted to be part of finding a cure. But would she have wanted to if she knew she would have to die? Maybe before the trip, but maybe she didn't want to lose Joel just as Joel didn't want to lose her. I don't know. I definitely couldn't kill any child for a maybe. Definitely not my child. Somebody else's maybe. I think. You know what I mean?
Somebody else's kid? Sure. I don't know that kid.
Hey, remember... Carl's kid.
Oh, Carl's kid.
We might be able to get a cure out of him. Oh yeah, try that. Well, here's the thing you got to know. I don't care.
I don't care.
Maybe cure. Carl's kid sucks.
that kid eats his boogers. Yeah, sure. Do whatever you want.
I'm just gonna say it.
We're all thinking it. No one's brave enough to say it, but that kid, total dud. Mm-hmm. Total dud.
Listen, we're all thinking it,
right?
Quote unquote, cure him. Or wait, whatever you said, do it. Much love, McDubs. P.S.
McDubs.
Can't wait to get my pills, baby sweater.
Sweater?
I'm so excited for you, Megan.
Yeah.
P.P.S. Pedro is daddy. I get it. I'm right there with you.
Daddy.
Would love to hear you guys talk about the movie, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. I would love
Wonderful
to do that.
Wonderful movie. I love that movie.
Hey, any of you patrons out there, request that one.
Yeah, please let us record an episode on that.
I'm ready to watch it again.
And if you guys are listening, you haven't even heard of this movie, just rent it blindly. You'll love it. I guarantee it.
Guarantee it. Guarantee.
Tell him Nick Cage smooch is good.
Our next email comes in from Catherine B. Viewer who didn't play the game is the subject line. Hello.
Hello.
I like to pretend she might be Russian. Hello. Thank you for your coverage of the show this season. Being able to listen to first thing on Monday morning eased my grief for the ending of each episode. I did not play the game, but I was aware it was a game before watching. That's good enough. I found each episode deeply affecting and cried at some point in all 8 episodes. I think there's 9. That is definitely a first for me. Hearing this story after living through a pandemic changes my experience. I was cynical from the beginning about the possibility of a vaccine being effective because of the clusterfuck we experienced with supply and distribution of the COVID vaccine. I think, Steve, I think you touched on this earlier when I talked about
a little bit.
Everybody thinking they were experts. You're like, well, after COVID, it's kind of like that we are, right? And that's fair. And a societal collapse, I think it would be nearly impossible to distribute this vaccine in any kind of meaningful way. Maybe it was that experience or because I'm a parent myself, but I can understand Joel's choice to abandon. We have not got a single email that
fucking killer. Yeah. Listen, we've all been thinking it. She kind of sucks. She keeps drinking out
those jokes. Are these terrible. Jokes.
Boo. Hate them.
Who likes giraffes?
She beat up Jessica, whatever that girl's name was.
You know what's cool? Horses.
I do like horses.
Not giraffes.
Bullshit.
But I can understand Joel's choice to abandon humanity in favor of saving Ellie. What makes Joel the villain for me is the lie. He is brave enough to kill dozens of innocent people, people who could potentially heal the world, but not brave enough to own his choice for Ellie.
Absolutely.
I'd like to know more from people who played the game, how the vaccine was discussed in the game. Did you know while you were playing that Ellie's life was in was the answer? No. Did you get a sense that Ellie knew she would have to die for the cure? No. I'm not sure that's me answering. I'm not sure they captured that in the show. Anyway, this is the best TV I've ever watched. So I've decided to play part two to keep the story going. Ooh. Please follow up with us on that.
Have fun. It's dark.
No, at the same point of the story in the game, you get that same kind of, what do you mean you're going to kill her? You know? Yeah. And in fact, they originally planned to have that be an extended cutscene and decided to make it gameplay.
I think making a gameplay is good for the medium of a video game because
you
really feel as the player like, I don't want to be killing these guys.
And it's really hard. It's very hard. Die a bunch playing that part of the game.
Yeah. I totally lost my train of thought. There was something I wanted to speak to in there. But I really, really like what she said about Joel not being brave enough to tell her the truth, because he knows that if he tells her the truth, there's a good chance that she would think less of him. At the very least.
Yes.
And he could possibly lose her if he told her the truth. And that is a really, really good point. It's one of my favorite things about the relationship. And that feeds into the scene I talked about earlier about how she knows that he's lying to him. And it's just like, sure.
Okay. Yep.
It is funny that like no one has emailed in defense of the Fireflies. In terms of the game, like the vaccine being implemented, you're right. There isn't a good infrastructure to administer a vaccine to all these roaming bands of people that are about. But the point is you have it and you can create it, and then it'll be a very slow process. You touched on it earlier, Chris. It's like it's something that would take a couple generations to probably have a significant impact.
Mm-hmm.
But at least it's there and humanity isn't doomed to slowly die a thousand cuts, right? Or like band against each other until we all die.
Bear down, if you will.
Bear down, as one would. So the game doesn't actually say how they're going to do it. I don't even know if the game even calls it a vaccine. I think the game just calls it a cure. Like, it's very vague, I think, in the game.
Yes.
Because this was before COVID, before, like, vaccine was, like, a hot button word.
Yes. This is before we knew. Never mind. No, I was going to say a politically charged joke.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to leave it off. How about that?
Okay.
I'm growing up.
You are growing.
I'm maturing. I'm maturing.
Look at us. Look at us.
Bear down. I would say it, pussy. Tony, back up.
I like the old Chris. He would say it like it is.
I forget I interrupted you. I hope we were done.
Oh, I was done. Okay. I was done.
I just want to read a quick thing from Emily S. I think it's awesome.
Emily.
She says a lot of good stuff, but I thank you for the podcast. My sister Jenny and I are loyal listeners and are even going back and rewatching Stranger Things to get caught up on the pod from the beginning. Good luck with those early episodes.
Godspeed.
I look forward to my 3-time-a-week listens, Last of Us, Yellow Jackets, and Stranger Things rewatch, and all the laughs you guys give me. Keep it up. Heart emoji. Emily S., # sniper Tony for life.
Yeah.
I just love the idea of two sisters enjoying the show together. Like that's sister. Just like, or any family members, just like, just listen to the show, like just sharing that bond.
You know? I'm actually happy to hear that someone listens to all 3 episodes each week. Cause that is like a minor fear in my brain. Like, are we putting out too much content? So like knowing someone well, actually,
she's actually
consumes
even,
it
they're
all.
They're going back for more with the Stranger Things and in addition.
More.
More. Yeah. I mean, I wonder, I hope the Yellow Jackets listenership picks up because that show is a gem. And I know some of the shows we cover, that's always a fear of ours. Like, hey, maybe nobody gives a fuck about this show that we're going into now and we'll lose half our listeners.
And that's why it's so hard because a lot of people do message us. They're like, oh, you should cover this show. You should cover that show. And it is a balancing act because we're trying to pick the shows that are A, right for our audience, but B, can potentially grow it.
I would do all six seasons of Lost.
Yeah. We get that one all the time.
I've never seen the fucking show.
It's a great show.
But it's like, is that going to drop our listenership to 400 people? Because like a lot of emails and DMs is still ultimately like 400 people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like that's why we pick stuff like House of the Dragon. Even Rings of Power was like relatively low listenership, even though we thought that would be a huge show.
Yeah.
And we killed ourselves doing that alongside House of the Dragon.
Yeah.
For essentially not no reason, because some people get a lot of value out of that, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we got a lot of value, but it was like, it wasn't, we didn't have as great a return on our investment that we were hoping for.
And, you know, we want to ultimately please our core audience the most, but it's like, so why do you care about, you know, the most listeners possible? It's like, well, the more support that we have, the more likely we can do this full time. And then you can't fucking imagine the amount of content we could make.
If you and I could do this like 40 hours a week, like no real job to keep us, no other job. I shouldn't say no real job, no other job to keep us from doing this constantly.
Yeah.
Lord, we would be doing shows on The Mandalorian right now. Succession, probably.
Yep. Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso. We'd be doing all those, but we are just two men living our lives and we need to put roofs over our heads. So until then we have to, you know, do what we can. And that's why we're very selective with what we choose to record on.
Yeah. Right now it's like, we all watch whatever we got to watch, which is usually 5 or 6 hours of TV and movies, like Friday and Saturday separately and with our families, unless there's an episode to watch together. And then Steve and I get together 10 hours on Sunday and sit and record all the episodes for the week. And then he edits them all night and gets up and goes to work. I get up and go to work and, you know, and then I come home and fucking make TikTok videos and YouTube videos and shit.
And run the Discord and the Patreon page.
Yeah.
And, like there's a lot for this, the two of us.
But all I know, I don't know how I went off on this tangent again, but I guess I really just feel sadness inside. Like I really want to watch all the stuff that you guys are asking us to watch. And you know, cause we get tons of DMs and stuff like, where's the Andor episode and where's this episode?
Dude, nothing would make me happier than if we were covering Mandalorian at the same time as all this.
It hurts me, deeply. I think we need to wrap it up.
A terrible wound.
I think I'm going to call it. There's tons more emails, but I'm tired. I'm going to call it. I love you guys. Thank you so much for writing in so many good emails. I hope I wasn't too harsh, like, because I've been in the trenches with some Last of Us discourse for like a couple weeks now. And a lot of you diehard game, because I didn't play the game until like 6 months ago. But a lot of you diehard game fans have been like, fuck you, buddy. I've been in the trenches talking about this shit for 10 years. And it's like, that's fair. That's fair. But I think I've heard a lot of the same stuff. So, you know, I hope I didn't come off too harshly about certain things. Cause you guys are all so kind, so supportive.
Yeah. We love you guys so
much. The fact that you would take the time to send an email to me about this stuff, I never take for granted. I think that's great. So thank you all so much. Thank you to the mods running the Discord so beautifully. I love you all. That's all the time we have for right now. My name is Chris.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things. Happy streaming.
There are other things that can go on tangents, but it's late. We gotta wrap it up.
That's the last of things.
That's the last of things.
Boom, blank, don't blank, don't blank, blank.
Come on, Eddie. We gotta go find the fireflies.
What are you doing?
I heard you like dinosaurs. I'm gonna play that.
I know giraffes are kind of like dinosaurs.
Kind of. They're tall. I'm gonna play that Radiohead song real quick. If I ever were to lose a ear, I'd surely lose myself. You're making fun of me, Sam.
Oh, it's Sniper Tone here, and I've been instructed by the boys via radio to read you the brand new patrons in the month of March. These are people who have an extra set of mirth in their hearts. And they are truly the last line of defense between Streaming Things and a total economic collapse. So in the Try Before Deny section, I want to thank Luke and Sarah, Conrad and Trey Barrera. In the Marty B VIP section, we're thanking Tamara. Oh, old Tony's going to mispronounce this one, that's for sure. Jir Latanowitz. Oh, I mispronounced that just like I misfire my rifle. Brianna Bernard, we thank you. Elizabeth Palmer, Josh Stitch, and John Ricker. Oh, thank you all so much. In the chocolate pudding producer sections, we have Lair Gillis, Maha Axholtz. I probably missed that one too. Thank you to Jordan C., Kelly Shartner, Natalie Cleland, Sonny. Oh, it has not been sunny here in quite some time. Thank you to Wayne Yupst. Oh, I think the world has passed Tony by. Tony does not know what that word is. Yupst. Thank you to Shotzi, Brock Burick, Alicia Takahashi, Gabe, Quentin Vassa, Teresa Schwimmer, and Rob Westendorf. And last but not least, we have our friends Don't Lie to thank. Those friends are Taj Allah and Melissa Worcester. You know what? Old Tone used to shoot a Worcester back in his day. Or was it a Winchester? I don't know. I'm Sniper Tone. My mind is frail. I got to get back to protecting Kansas City. What? It's already on fire. Oh, Tony, you done it again.